Welcome to another episode of E-Meet With Me, a weekly podcast where we get to interact with creatives who reveal through their stories how to navigate through life. On today's episode, we have Sharon Takim, an educator, a Christian, and a model, who tells us how to shake off religion in our contemporary environment. Stay tuned, relax, and enjoy this episode. Welcome, Sharon, to this episode of E-Meet With Me. Thank you for agreeing to do this with us. We're so glad to have you in here. How are you, Sharon?
I am very fine. Thank you so much for having me. I feel in great company. Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Thank you, Sharon, once again. Okay, so the first thing we would like to know is who exactly is Sharon? Many people will be hearing your voice for the first time. There are so many things on my mind to say about you, but I'll let you do the honors first. So, Sharon, what should we expect when we hear Sharon? What should we expect when we see Sharon? Who exactly is Sharon?
Okay, well, currently I am on a, I'll call it a self-discovery journey. Up until a while ago, if you had asked me who is Sharon, the answer would have been very clear, very definite. But in the last few months, I've had a lot of upheavals, So I'm basically in a rebirth process. But what I have done so far is, my name is Sharon Takim. I just finished 2 years as a Teach for Nigeria fellow. I studied at Urban Regional Planning, University of Lagos. I've done a lot of things. I've been in a lot of places. I've had the privilege to, you know, I worked with a luxury company for a bit. I also run a group called Intentional. It's just a WhatsApp group, but basically it's for ladies. It's for, our focus is growth, capacity building for the most part, where everybody, all the ladies are encouraged to be all that they can be, where we don't believe that you have to be only one thing. So, for instance, you shouldn't just be, why should it be that you are limited to being just a mother or just a wife? You can be so much more. I mean, we just had a female vice president elect for the United States. We have people like Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala that we look up to. So that's the goal. The goal is to make sure that no area of our life suffers, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual. We're completely balanced, and at the same time, we're tapping into every resource that has been placed on the inside of us by God. So that's like my current claim to fame. Everything else is, I really don't know.
Well, I like that honest answer. For the fact that you're talking, you say you do mostly women, right? You talk to women, you have a group for women. Does that make, does that affect the general productivity of the whole thing? Because they always say when we focus on one gender, their chances are that we get too focused on the other gender and get neglect the other, the second gender. So what do you think about this? Do you think it's actually counterproductive focusing on just one gender and not paying requisite attention to the other gender? Since we, of course, have to coexist and live and get to live peacefully with one another. So what do you think about that?
Yes, I get where they're coming from. And to a large extent, they're right. We have to coexist with everybody. I believe it's important to play to your strengths. I don't talk to men because I don't feel like I know enough about what it is to be a man, the challenges, the unique challenges that they face, enough to be effective. So if I am talking to men, it will be in a general sense, nothing too specific, because I am not a man. So I can't generalize. I know things that are unique to me, being a woman, being a Nigerian, living in Nigeria. So I can speak on the basis of that. I can say I'm a bit of an authority of that subject. I stand to be corrected. But when it comes to men, I don't think I know enough to to teach men like that to that extent. If it's general stuff, yes, absolutely. But when I talk to women, I'm not saying you grow, and then it's in a bit too. It's like this, everybody does their part. then when we come together, we have a whole that makes sense because everybody is operating at full capacity.
Yeah.
So the ladies are giving 100, the men are giving 100, and then we work together. So what I'm not doing, I'm not doing, oh, make sure you know how to cook so that your husband will be happy. It's not my business what you get besides me, and just hire me, right? And thinking about things like, should I do a master's or should I start working immediately? And I said, okay, if you can combine both, why not? Mm. Should I be a stay-at-home mom or should I work? And I'm saying, if you desire to work, I think there's systems that would help you not stop your growth process at any point, to keep learning. So for me, really, I don't have the repetitive experience. I'm humble enough to admit that my knowledge has limitations. So, I mean, I recommend things like, you know, courses, things to do that can help you grow that are general, I share. But when it comes to specifics of being a woman, I focus on women, not because I'm trying to create imbalance, but because I'm trying to play to my strength. And I believe there are places where there are men that help men grow, right? So in the end, if I'm giving 100 and you are giving 100, by the time we come together, we'll make magic.
True.
So and that's my perspective on the imbalance in focusing on only one gender.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. That's quite enlightening. And I think, like you said, if everybody focuses on doing their own bits, eventually everybody will be okay. True. So Sharon, at every point, when I think about Sharon, it always looks like Sharon has a lot going on for her. At every point, it's like you have a lot of activities, a lot of involvement, a lot of people and all that. I don't know if it's just how I see it or how people see it, but that's actually how it is. And if this is true, how do you get to juggle up all these numerous activities and remain effective and efficient in your work?
Okay. Well, I think that there's something I call the curse of the 10 talents, where you're good at a lot of things, so you end up not having a specification or an area of expertise. Mm-hmm. It's like a double-edged sword when you're good at a couple of things. Mm-hmm. So yes, I've been doing a lot of things at the same time. Like for instance, when I was in Kaduna State for about 3 years, mm-hmm. and for two of those 3 years, I was combining School of Ministry, I was combining being a Teach for Nigeria fellow, I was working online at the same time, I was working remotely for an organization as well, and then I started my NYS. Yeah. I don't recommend it. I do not recommend it, because the truth is, you would be effective enough to make progress in all of them, mm-hmm. but you would not take as much impact as you could if you were focusing on one. It's the truth. Your energy is being spread in different directions.
True.
I have had a lot of experience with multitasking, so I can do that and maybe escape. But even when I'm doing that, I know that I'm not operating at full capacity, because some days I'm just unable to count. Like literally, I don't have the energy to do anything. So, I mean, yes, you can do a lot like I have done, but one of the things I'm doing currently is stepping back and doing things that I only absolutely have to by myself. Mm. And one of the things that helped me was I surrounded myself with people that could help me. So my philosophy was, if somebody else can do it, I will not do it. So if I can recommend somebody else to do that same thing for you and I trust the quality of their work, I'll recommend you to them. Mm. I'm not trying to be the messiah. I'm not trying to be everybody's answer. Mm. I'm just trying to function in the places where I know there are certain things that only me can offer at this level in this place. Mm. So yes, I have been involved in doing quite a bit over the years, but I've learned that sometimes it's counterproductive. It's not the best. If you can achieve expertise, please do so. But if you feel like you can combine things, I mean, you should combine things. And there's a level in your life where you can diversify without much impact to yourself. Mm. So if you get to that point, you can start to do that. But if you can at the beginning, make sure that everything you're doing has a central theme. For instance, mine is I'm passionate about helping people become the best that they can be, whether that is physical, spiritual, emotional, or in the social space. Mm. So that passion led to spreading out into doing School of Ministry, into being a Teach for Nigeria fellow, that social change, into doing intentional, that's helping women. But there was a central theme. So I had like I had my true north, I had my focus, and everything I was doing was like, there's the main river, then there are little streams. So everything was flowing out of that central theme. So if you want to do many things at the same time, if you want to have a lot going on, make sure that everything you're doing is tied to a central theme, and make sure that you do only what is absolutely necessary to be done by you and you alone. Everything else delegates. If not, you'll burn out and you will not be as effective as you can be. And you'll be surprised that you start out in an area with so much potential, especially if you're being employed, and then you end up performing under par and everybody's disappointed. It's happened to me, so I'm speaking from experience. If you can ask someone else to do it, please ask them to do it. If you can postpone it and focus on two other main things for now, please do that. It doesn't mean you're giving up. It just means that you know what you should be doing at this particular time, and you know what you can do in the future. That's basically my take on multitasking or doing it.
Thank you so much, Sharon, for sharing. You spoke about School of Ministry, so it's safe to assume that you are a church girl in the real context of the word. And then, but it seems like most of your activities are largely secular. So how do you maintain your convictions in a secular environment, right? What are the challenges you faced? Is it actually a challenge for you, first of all? And if it was, what are actually challenges you faced? And how did you just maintain being who you are, your values and everything in a secular world?
Well, this question is, okay, let me put it this way. Part of the journey that I said I've been on now is, I think I'll call it losing my religion to an extent. So a lot of us...
Can you clarify that? And like, can you make that, break that down a bit? I think there's a lot.
Okay. Okay, so many of us, we grew up in the church environment. We say generally, oh, I love God, this and that, I'm a Christian, I'm cool. But somehow, fundamentally, many of the things we do are steeped in religion. So I think it's important sometimes to stop and ask yourself, okay, why do I pray every day? Why do I have devotion? Why do I go to church? So many people just do it by rote and they think they know why they're doing it. Meanwhile, it's just subconscious programming. And those many times when you're now in a place where the systems that you put in place do not work, you tend to find yourself going out of character. That's what most people call backsliding. Like, for instance, for a long time, because of the COVID crisis, many people could not go to church, many people could not engage in as many activities as they used to. There are some people that will be in church on Monday for prayer meeting, on Tuesday for choir rehearsals, Wednesday you're there for midweek service, Saturday you're there for set up, Sunday you're there in church, right? And you think it's because you love God. Sometimes it's selfish.
And you probably just don't have any other thing to do.
Some people don't have anything to do.
Sure.
Because if you're genuinely busy, there are some things that would not be in your purview. It would be an extreme sacrifice for you to be able to be that involved in church activities. So many people did not know what to do with themselves in this COVID season, because a lot of the things that they called loving God was external. I mean, you're at home, so nobody can see you lifting up holy hands. You're at home, so you can't fall under the anointing. And people say, my God, the Holy Spirit is always open to this one. So when I believe that this whole COVID thing was a blessing in that it made people really sit down and take stock of who they were when everything else on the outside was removed. So I realized that a lot of what I was doing, I mean, 2019 into 2020 was quite a roller coaster for me, emotionally, physically. I mean, 2019 was the year, if I were to call a year my defining year, it was 2019. There was so much going on emotionally, physically. I had to have surgery in 2019. That's on top of the emotional, on top of everything. So there was a strain on everything. And for the first time in my life, I was someone that I didn't know that the externals were becoming a thing of pride. where praying for hours was a thing of, you know, it's my strength. Mm. I can do this. I'm practiced. I'm a prayer warrior, etc. And I got to the point where I'd actually even wake up to pray and there were no words. Like, I'd literally just sit down and I had no energy. I had nothing. I was like down to first minimum. And sometimes I would wake up and like try to do the motions and literally I would help the Holy Spirit tell me, go and sleep. Go and sleep. And I'll go back to bed. And it's strange how in that time where I wasn't doing so much of the externals was where I really became very centered in my relationship with God, in understanding really what Jesus did for me. Where we say that we don't have to do works, but some of us don't really believe it. We're still trying to earn everything that God has already freely given to us. Okay. So we don't understand people that maybe come to church once, mm-hmm. once a week, and subconsciously we're judging them. This one is always missing midweek service, etc. Yeah. Meanwhile, you don't know where they are with God. So that was the transition that started for me in 2019, and then I entered into 2020, and then there was now literally no church. So there's nothing to hide behind. There's no institution, there's no structure. This one, you know that if you don't have a relationship with God, you don't have it. It's that simple. So I came, everything was stripped down to a bare minimum, and it just became a question of, do I really love God? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Who am I without the external? I mean, I was at a point a few years back where a lot of people used to like calling me Mama. And Mama is my middle name, but when they use Mama, they use it in the context of spirituality.
Yeah.
And now, I don't allow people to call me Mama anymore. Like, if you call me that, in as much as it's my middle name, I call you sister back. Before, if you call me by my name or you call me sis, somewhere at the back of my mind, I'm like, this one does not honor, this one does not understand grace, this one does not recognize the oil. But I've come to the point where I don't need you to call me Mama to know that God loves me. I don't need your validation to know that God has placed stuff on the inside of me. And I think I'm much better off for it. I may not, a lot of people, someone told me, you've changed though. Because I don't like share as much as I used to. And it's not that. I'm trying to build things on the inside now, much more than the external things.
Yeah.
So without anything, without a title, and luckily for me, I have moved from the physical location where I was into a new location. And this time, I don't even want to join the workforce. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to be known, recognized, or seen. I just want to be a simple girl that loves God. And I'm glad for that move because it allows me to, just be at the barest minimum, not expecting accolades just for breathing and stuff like that. And a lot of people that do that spiritually, it almost feels like they've not attained recognition anywhere else. So they decided that the church is the easiest place to get accolades. So they soak all that in. And they're not making any progress secularly. They're not making any progress. I mean, God didn't call us to the church. If you say you're a Christian and God said going into all the world, why are you hiding in the church? You're praying in tongues for 7 hours, but you're not creating anything that is helping humanity. I am sorry, but you are missing the entire point.
Exactly.
C.S. Lewis was a writer, but he was a Christian, and he used his writing to speak to people. Even atheists saw the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I watched it as a kid, but then I watched it again, and I could see clearly the principles and how what Jesus did was explained clearly in that book. So I believe that if your whatever you're doing cannot appeal to a secular person, you've missed the point of Christianity completely. When Jesus was talking to his disciples, he talked to them differently. When Jesus was with the public, he used parables that they could understand. Parable of the sower, economics, business, things like that. So Jesus was well-balanced, well-rounded. So why do we think that we can get away with sweating in church and then we come outside and we have nothing? And we're so comfortable with that accolade we receive in church that we decide not to go in any other area. And we're doing ourselves a disservice. And there's nothing someone that doesn't know God doesn't have as an advantage over you.
Yes.
If it's finances, they are settled. So when you tell them, come and meet my Jesus, and they're like, okay, what do you have to offer me? Even your character is zero. You're still as angry as you've always been. Even after praying in tongues for 7 hours, you still come out and insult somebody. So there's a lot of pride in the activities as opposed to the relationship. And there's almost no practicality in what we call our Christianity. And we're almost completely unrelatable. People don't even know what to talk to you about because it's all visions, encounters, and they don't even know what you're talking about. So how in the world are you going to speak to them? How are you going to minister to them? What is the point of connection that you have with them if you're always hiding in church? So that's what I meant by losing my religion. I didn't forget where we started from.
Wow. Honestly, this actually is an eye-opener. Like, there are so many things you shared. You even entered encouraged into my next question, which I will still ask anyway. But you really shared so many things. And I think if everybody can be sincere enough with themselves to do this assessment periodically, to know exactly, ascertain or just examine yourself. Why do you do these things you do? Like, what exactly forms the basis of your conviction? What's the foundation? If certain things are taken away, why exactly do you claim the things you claim? Is it because someone told you to do so, or is what you grew up knowing, or is what you saw people around you doing, right? These things are really fundamentals, and I'm so happy you got to touch on almost everything. The next thing I want to ask, which you already started shedding light on, but I think we should just shed more light on, is what are the common misconceptions people have about Christians who are in the secular world, right? What do you think the common misconceptions are? And then how do Christians, people who are already in the secular world and advancing doing stuff, how should they relate with these people? How should they entertain these criticisms and these misconceptions? How do they continue with all these things?
Okay. I think that the first thing is you should be very grounded in your relationship with God, whatever it looks like. So for you, you might not be, for instance, some people are not so emotional. So when they come to church, you don't see them jumping all over the place or crying or anything. But their relationship is deep and solid. Now, you don't put yourself under pressure to start crying because somebody else looks like they're connecting with God more than you. So it's important. Yeah. That's the first thing. Don't base your relationship on what others are doing. Then, if you're in a secular world, that's where you be. For instance, there is Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, I believe, is a Christian. But yes, when you talk to her, she comes to you, she doesn't introduce herself as, I am Sister Ngozi, I attend the church. And we've turned it into, we've missed the whole point, I think. When you talk about Ngozi, you say she is currently in the running for being the head of the World Trade Organization. She has done this, she has done that, she's a minister. And her life in itself is a testimony of the gospel. If someone like Ngozi tries to talk to you about the things that she believes, you will listen. Because first of all, she has shown you that she didn't use Christianity as a means of escapism.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not like many people, it's when they failed everywhere else that they go and start a church.
Yes.
And I'm like, see, I don't want you to talk to me about how God can bless you and prosper you if you've not prospered in the secular world. Please don't tell me, because everything you're saying, like I was saying, is in theory. So there was this minister, his name is Nobel Hayes. He was a businessman, he was known as a businessman, but he operated in all the nine gifts of the spirit. He did everything that a regular pastor did, but he was never a minister. He never opened a ministry. He was part of the Full Gospel Businessman's Fellowship, but primarily he was a businessman. So whenever he went on business trips or he talked to people, he had the opportunity to relate with them from the standpoint of business, gain their attention. Then when they see his lifestyle and they see the difference, because primarily Christianity is not about what God can give you, blessings, fame, all of that. No, it's about the intangibles, It's about the joy that nothing can take away. It's about the peace. It's about how you radiate from the inside and people just want to be around you. Because what do you give someone that has everything? Exactly. If it's money, people can get money from anywhere. If it's, you know, whatever we call our standards for success, cars, houses, clothes, all of that, there are people that have them and never knew God, right? So you can't tell me, come and be a Christian so God will bless you. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. But when someone has everything, but they are still unfulfilled, they're still terribly unhappy, and they see you, and there's just something about you, there's something you have, they don't know what it is, but they want that. Mm. That's evangelism.
Exactly.
When they see the joy, they see the peace, they see how you radiate from the inside, they see how people, I mean, they have worries, they talk to you, they leave feeling better than they did. They see how you are kind in situations where you don't have to be kind. They see where people have nothing to offer you, yet you still treat them the way they should be treated. And they're like, you have every right to be a mean, right to treat people anyhow, but you choose to still act human, you still choose to reach people as you are. And they're like, I want to know, why are you like this? How are you like this? Then you can start ministering to them.
Exactly.
At this point, people don't go to hell because they sin. It has never been that. The reason why people go to hell is simply because they have not accepted what Jesus has done. Exactly. It's that simple. So everything else that people use as evangelizing tools, where they use fear and they tell you you go to hell, zero. Where they tell you God will bless you, zero. All of that does not matter to people at certain levels. So, I mean, it depends on who you want to speak to. If you want to reach a mediocrity, no, Yawa, I mean, you're free, go ahead. All those tools will work. But let's face it, we need people of means and substance in the kingdom. People are funding Boko Haram. We can't be preaching this tea and bread gospel. There are people that can single-handedly fund missions everywhere. And we're not bringing those people because we have absolutely nothing to tell them that will make any impact whatsoever. We can't even be in their circle because we don't grow, we don't read, we don't study, we don't improve ourselves, we just appear anyhow, we feel like any. So we're missing out on a large chunk of people. Our gospel is tailored to only a certain kind of person. And we've missed the whole point. So I believe that being in the secular world, in fact, what exactly is the secular world? I don't know how people are able to create a distinction where this one is spiritual. Everything I do starts from the spiritual. So everything I do is spiritual, even though it's work. Because I take the fruits of the spirit with me to work. I take the gifts of the spirit with me to work. When I have an issue and I have a problem that needs to be solved, the spirit of wisdom comes immediately. That's a manifestation of the seven spirits of God. Not laying hands or someone and the person falls down and they get up and they're exactly the same as they were before they fell down. So everything that God has given you in Christianity is for use in what we call, in quotes, the secular world. It's not in your church, and that's why we're missing it. So that idea of the secular world is a fallacy, is a way to insulate ourselves, because many people are not sure that it can measure up to the standard that people expect. They don't put Christian in front of them. So they don't know anything, but they tell you, should I have Jesus, I'm going to hell. Congratulations. People that are in the secular, that are in business, that are in fashion, that are in any place, the goal is simple. Let your light so shine for men so that they glorify my Father which is in heaven.
Is that your word?
Take your salt, your light, your all of these things. We know what God has said about us. So take it. The fashion world needs you. Don't go and hide because they'll say, sister, this your design is not Christian. I mean, for instance, I'm contesting personally in a pageant. Like, I started the process. At some point, it was such a struggle. I kept feeling guilty. I kept feeling somehow. And I had to, like, take a long season to pray. Because I'm like, okay, God, I didn't start the whole process. How I got into pageantry was basically it was divine. It was how God healed me of serious inferiority complex. When I was in 102nd semester, my hostel pageant was coming up. I used to think I was ugly. I used to think I had nothing. Like, the only thing I knew I couldn't deny was that I was smart. So if you make a compliment as regards my brain, I'll accept it. If you try to compliment me on anything else, I will reject it immediately. Because I didn't see myself, I used to slouch. I didn't see myself as beautiful. I didn't think I had anything to offer. And at the end of my 100 level, tour 7th semester, my hostel was going to have their pageant as per whole week and everything. And someone in my hostel kept saying, go, go, go. I was so reluctant. Like, I mean, I already knew I was going to fail. So why are you setting me up? Why are you doing this to me now? And then it didn't help that a lot of people were, I was hearing a lot of side comments. A roommate of mine was also contesting, you know, stuff like that. So I didn't want to do it. I wasn't serious. But I just kept going. I just kept fantastically doing it. For the final day, that particular lady was one. She told me the hairstyle to make. She called her friend to make. She made sure she looked for dinner gown and costumes for me. That day happened to be my brother's final year week traditional day. So he got a traditional costume from one of his classmates to give to me for my traditional. That's how scattered I was. I did not even have anything. And then I got on stage and I just answered the question. And then they were calling the runners up to come up stage. And then they called third position. We were four of us in our particular category. They called fourth. No, they called third. They called second. We were two left. And I was like, oh, sorry, you came and carried land. And all of a sudden, they called me.
Wow.
And it shifted something in my mind. From being this, I mean, I was such a tomboy. I didn't care because I didn't want to care because I didn't think it made any impact. And it was all subconscious. If you ask me, I was very... I could give you a smart answer to hide the fact that there was a lot of insecurity. But it did something to me. It was God telling me, I'm not the only one that sees you as beautiful. I mean, the world can see. So it really shifted something completely for me. I went for another one. I was second runner-up. I mean, I placed, even when they had asked me, because it was... That one was kind of rigged, but they asked me a question. I didn't know the answer. I said I didn't know. And I still came out second round out. Right? So, what used pageantry at a place in my life where I would not have listened to anybody that would have told me I was beautiful? So, my perspective is completely different from... But then, some people are like, Mama is doing pageantry. What coming to all this club backstage? And I'm like, okay, I don't get it. But anyways, I mean, and I had to carry that guilt for a while. I was really, okay, is this the right decision? Am I doing the right thing? And it took me like a long time to come to a place of peace with it. And I think that anybody that is doing anything that people call secular or is quite unorthodox, so it's not like you're a lawyer, you're a banker, you're this. It's just something that is not termed regular.
Yeah.
Come to peace. Be at peace with your decisions. Your Christianity is not for public show. What shall it profit you to be pious in everybody's eyes and then there's somebody you could have reached through an unorthodox means, but you chose to be politically correct and that person did not get... Because you meet people in their world, in their zone. Where are you going to meet those people? How are you going to meet them? They're not going to fall from the sky or appear in front of you. Most times you have to be in the places where they are to be able to speak to them, to be able to minister to them, because even your presence should be ministry. So pray and be at peace with it. If you're going to do this, be at peace with, this is my next step. This is what I have chosen to do. Some people might not understand it, but it's okay. This is what I have decided to do. And I have come to terms with it. Me and my God were good. Now, of course, the things that you do will affect other people, especially if you're in a place where people look up to you. So yes, you have to be careful, but make sure that you do not sacrifice your personal peace and your work with God at the expense of pleasing people. And make sure that you do not live life with regret, saying, oh, I should have taken that opportunity, I should have done that. Because many times in what people call secular is where there is a blessing from God. Joseph was the most secular, I don't even know. Joseph was like, if you look at a game called Monopoly, the face should be Joseph. Because he sold food, they didn't have anything, collected their land, and they were working for him. They still didn't have anything. They sold everything they had to Joseph. And Joseph the Christian collected everything. So, Christian, what shall he profit him? You're too greedy. Why are you making so much money here? This world, all is vanity. I'm sorry. If that's vanity, if wealth and comfort is vanity, I tend to be very, very extremely vain in this life. Very vain. So, if you're in a secular pursuit, it's okay. Somebody has to do it. Now, I'm not talking of things that we obviously know are sin or are not right for a Christian to do. I'm talking about the things that fall into what we call gray areas, where there's no room. Just make sure that you are at peace. And if anything is violating your peace within that space, even if you've started, it's always okay to say, you know what, I can't do this. Like, for instance, there was a pageant I saw. They had a bikini segment, and there was a lady there. She's a Muslim. She's a Muslima, so she covered her hair all through, like she had a scarf. And when it got to the bikini segment, she just tied, they gave them with a scarf, so she just tied it in a very funky way. And she wasn't showing anything, and she still came out like that. So why is it Christians that are very afraid to offend people and we're very politically correct, or we're hiding it instead of finding the wisdom of God in that situation so that you function and you're still exceptional? The answer is not running away. Because, I mean, look at what's happening in politics now. Because people decided it's the devil's game, and then now the devil is showing us Pepe.
Exactly.
We're hiding. We're just simply hiding. Somebody's going to do it. Nature abhors vacuum. There's no space that will not be filled. If you decide not to fill it, even if you were made for that place, an aberration is going to fill it for you. It's that simple. But it can't be empty. If an idea's time has come, if you don't have the wisdom to work it out in such a way that it appeals to the world and at the same time doesn't violate your personal peace, somebody that does not care about personal peace will come and it's that simple. So find your peace. If you are in a gray area, find your peace in that place. Know that I'm not violating. There's three things: good conscience, fear of the Lord. I forgot the third one. Okay, yes.
Posterity.
Thank you very much. So that's how I judge my action. Are they in line with the fear of the Lord? Are they in good conscience? Am I violating my personal peace? And in the future, will I look back and regret this? If it passes these three things, I'm sorry, I don't care who you are. I'm going to do it. Because there's no year I will stand before on judgment day, let's be honest. So you have to come to a point where you decide that I'm going to place my personal peace above the opinions of people. And then when you're in such places, please don't be the person that will carry Bible. Big Bible, put it on your desk. Yet you are the meanest person in that office. But you are serving the living God. I've seen rubbish. It's part of the reasons I had to lose my religion, because if it's based on what people do, many people are horrible people, extremely terrible people. But they hide under the umbrella of Christianity and they are misrepresenting us. And you have decided you're not going to go into that thing. So what are we going to do? So that somebody now says, you're a Christian, so you're like them. That's so it defeats the entire purpose.
Yeah.
So and you don't have to carry a Bible up and down before people know that you're following Christ. I don't think you have to do that. I think it's important that your lifestyle shows people what you believe. That peace that radiates from your inside, that joy, that thing that makes people comfortable around you, that ability to lift people's burdens when they speak to you and they feel peace, that ability to not judge people. Let me not digress. But yes, I think my point has come across clearly.
Yes,
being a Christian is more about your lifestyle than you carrying a Bible and professing Jesus and just like, I don't know you. And if you are in a gray area, make sure that your personal peace at every time is not compromised. You know, things like modeling, where you have to wear clothes and sometimes you're like, okay, I'm not exactly sure about this. It's okay to say, you know what, I don't think this is it for me. Or it's okay to pray about, and people like misreading the book of Esther. Please, read it. When the Bible says the king found favor with her, let the Lord give you understanding as to what happened there, because we gloss it over, and the Bible did not gloss anything over.
Yeah.
So there are gray areas, and you have to find your peace with that. But make sure there's good conscience, you're considering posterity, and everything you do, you keep the fear of the Lord at the center. So that's it for me.
Wow, so powerful. Very powerful. I think it just, what will sum it up is just knowing that by our fruits we'll be known as Christians. If we do not exhibit the fruits of Christ, we are not Christians, no matter what we say, no matter the things we profess, no matter how we act and all that. And the greatest of all is love. Just loving God. Yeah, loving God and loving people. Thank you so much, Sharon. This is so powerful. Honestly, I can't wait for every other person to hear this. I'm really excited about this episode. So are there any final words, anything you want to just add, anything to just summarize all what you've shared today? Right.
Okay. Well, at the beginning I mentioned that I'm in a process again of, you know, I'm basically starting over.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for you to know that it's okay to become a different person.
Mm.
You don't have to be who you were 5 years ago because people already know you as that person. The hallmark of growth is transformation. It's okay to wake up and say, you know what, I used to believe this. I don't believe it anymore.
Yeah.
It's okay to say, I was very convinced about this, but at this point, I'm not sure that is what I believe anymore. So I'm taking a step back. It's okay to, I think it's even advisable to periodically take stock of your life and ask yourself, how did I get here? Why am I doing the things I'm doing? Is there something I need to stop doing? Is there something I need to start doing? Let's make transformation normal. Let's not make people feel guilty where you say things like, you've changed though. It's okay to change. In fact, it's recommended that you change. So some people started out wanting to be probably doctors. Let me use a simple example. And then right now, they don't want to be doctors anymore. It's okay to change your mind. It's okay to, you don't follow a path that you know is no longer right for you just because you started. You will not get closer to your destination. So if you need encouragement, you want to make a big change, you want to say, you know what, I used to believe this, I no longer believe this, it's okay to do that. It's okay to reinvent yourself. It's okay for you to, it's okay for you to decide to be somebody else. It's okay for you to change your major. It's okay for you to say, okay, you should know this as part of my personality, but that is no longer who I am, and you shouldn't have to apologize for it. So as long as you continue to be at every point, be unapologetically your truest self. Unapologetically, you don't have to explain your actions, or as long as it's in line with good conscience, fear of God, and prosperity, I don't think you should spend your time trying to justify or explain the things that you do to others. I think it's very, very, very important that you keep that in mind. It's okay to transform. The larva becomes a pupa, which becomes a butterfly. And at each stage, it is beautiful. At each stage, it is exactly where it is supposed to be. So it's okay at any stage to say, I think I want to try something new. And don't be afraid to try something new. And if you're trying something new, it's going back to something you used to do. That's okay. I mean, look at the story of Ruth and Naomi. Naomi left Bethlehem and came back. She even came back more empty than she left. But it was in her coming back that she entered into a new season and a new phase and into restoration and all of that.
Yeah.
So it's okay for you to probably revisit dreams that you shut down before. For instance, I didn't do anything remotely related to modeling for 3 years. That year, 2017, I prayed about it and I decided I was giving up pageantry because I had been practicing for one prior to that. And here I am in 2020, I'm going for another one. And I don't need to justify it to people and say, oh, okay. It's not that you didn't hear God the first time, but you heard God now. For instance, Mike Todd, he has told the story many times of how he wanted to do music, and then he spoke to God and he decided to stop. And this year he's going back into music. It's not that he heard wrong before. I think it's very important for you to know that some of your dreams are not for now. They're for sometime in the future. And if you're having to put a stop now, it doesn't mean that it's not valid. It doesn't mean that it's not true. It just means that there are times and seasons, and this is probably not the best time for it. There's something you need to learn. But it's okay to wake up tomorrow and say, you know what, I want to try again. But it's okay to say, you know what, I've done this for years. I've decided I don't want to do it anymore. It's okay at every time to reinvent yourself and become a different version of you, and you shouldn't have to apologize for that. So that's it for me.
Thank you so much, Sharon. Thank you.
Thank you.
People who want to get in contact with you, they want to reach you, they want to ask more questions, they want to run mentorship, any form of contact, what's the best way to reach you?
Well, you can reach me via email. You can also reach me via phone. I think they can reach you for those details, right?
Yes.
If they want to. Yes. So I'm giving my consent. If there's anyone like that, please feel free.
Thank you for joining in today's conversation. We believe you enjoyed it. Don't forget to share and favorite this podcast. Never forget, we are committed to your success. Cheers.